Welcome to the Boaters Podcast. I am Jacek from Boaters, and today I am here with a very special guest. His name is Dr. Per Kemmerer. He's a maxillofacial surgeon, and actually he has got a leading position at the University Clinic of Mainz. So yeah, welcome. It's a pleasure to have you here. Welcome to the Boaters Podcast, Per.
Jacek, thank you so much. Thank you so much for inviting me, being here. It's an honor, as always, working with Boaters. It's been a decade now since we started using the products and doing the research together. And of course, I'm very happy to be here.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time. So, Per, I think our listeners would be very, very interested to get to know you a little bit more. I mean, you have a very impressive CV. You have studied medicine, you have studied dentistry, you have studied health management. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Well, you told everything so far. So I did my medical education in Mainz and in Switzerland, together with my dental education. Then in Germany, you have to do both for getting the certificate for oral and maxillofacial surgery. And then I started to work in Rostock, which is in the eastern part of Germany, for 4 years as a medical director. And then my now boss and old friend, Professor Bilal Al-Navas, became head of department in Mainz, and he invited me to come over, which I did, and I'm quite happy to be here. So actually, at the moment, I'm the medical director of this department, University Medical School in Mainz. We do a lot of clinical work, but we also do a lot of scientific stuff related to oral regeneration, maxillofacial regeneration procedures, including, of course, bone substitute materials, soft tissue grafts, dental implants, but also microvascular reconstructions. So it's a very broad topic we have.
Now, talking about the practical work that you have mentioned, so you are a director at the university clinic. Do you still have time to do surgeries yourself also?
I try to. I really try to. My job is getting more and more into administration stuff. And my boss keeps on telling me that I should do more administration and less surgeries. But honestly, as a surgeon, I like to be in OR, and I really like to do the surgeries. Yes, I'm doing them. It's always a problem. When I have a day long surgery, then afterwards I don't have the time to look at all my emails. So Jacek, I'm sorry if I'm not answering you all the time at the point. That's the reason.
That's okay. No worries. So talking a little bit maybe about surgeries a little bit deeper. One of your specialties or one of the techniques that you use quite a lot is the so-called shell technique. Can you tell us a little bit more about this technique, maybe to our listeners who are not yet familiar with it? What is the shell technique and when is it being used?
Well, it's based on the publications of Professor Khoury, who was the first describer of these techniques. He took bone block from the mandibular ramus and used it. He put some screws on it and fixed it on the defect, on horizontal or vertical and all vertical defect, and used this shell, the very thin shell, as a container of bone substitute materials. He always used patient's own bone in order to regenerate the width and height of the jaw.
Mm-hmm.
From this technique coming, it has been now 6 years since we started it the first time. We were one of the first trying these allogenic shells, shells for the shelting technique, because you don't have to harvest the patient's own bone. You don't have the donor site mobility, which there is a kind of bonus site mobility. You always have it, and we don't have that. We didn't have it anymore by using the allogenic shells. And we have great results in using this. You can use it for, as I said, for horizontal and vertical augmentation in the jaws, in the lower jaw, in the upper jaw. There are several advantages. It's easier than using titanium mesh or block grafts. But if you look, for example, if you go to the posterior mandible, it might be technical demanding. So for these cases, I really prefer my patient sleeping because you have to work a lot on it. But if you go into the anterior mandible or in the anterior maxilla, this is the best technique we have at the moment, from my point of view.
Mm-hmm. Now, coming back to the classical shell technique, you already mentioned it. Originally, you used autologous bone, so you were harvesting a bone plate from the ramus. How much time does it usually take to harvest such a bone plate from the patient?
Well, that's a good point. If you look at the publications of Curie, it takes some 10 minutes. But I think it's just the harvesting, just taking the saw, taking it out, and that's it. If you look, you have to start, you put in the local anesthesia, then you do the incisions, you harvest the bone, then you close the wound site. For me, it takes about 30 to 40 minutes to finish harvesting such a block. If you use the original Curie technique, then you have to thin the block in a significant way, which also takes some time and depends of your experience. So at the end, let's say it's 40 minutes.
Mm-hmm. And the original shell technique, what do the patients say about it when you harvest a piece from the ramus? Do they like it? Some of them, maybe. I don't know.
I don't think so. If you have the alternative not to use the own bone without these possible complications, donor side complications, with the same result at the end, because the patient, he doesn't care about where the bone comes from, or if you take the bone from the ramus or the chin. At the end, it's about complications first. And the second thing is the patients, they undergo these procedures because they want to have teeth. And you have to focus this, because at the end, it has to be a result which is so good that allows the patients to have teeth based on implants.
Mm-hmm. So when it comes to the result, if you compare the classical shell technique, the one where you harvest a piece from the patient, and you compare this to using an allogenic graft such as Max Graft Cortico, clinically, do you see any differences in the result?
Well, from the we didn't do split mouth studies so far. But we have patients with the original technique, and we have patients with the allogenic technique, and we don't see any differences.
Mm-hmm. One question that was once asked to me by a clinician who was planning to use, or who was using actually, the Max Graft Cortico plate was whether or not he should hydrate it before use. Now, you have done actually a study on the hydration protocol of Max Graft Cortico. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we were all also thinking about this, because one disadvantage of the Max Graft Cortico is that it's quite brittle. Due to the processes in removing DNA and in removing proteins and so on, it's allogenic after all, it has to be cleaned. Due to these processes, it loses the natural flexibility of bone. And it might even fracture when you screw it in. And therefore, it makes sense to make it a little bit more flexible. And so we tested several time points in hydration of these shells. We tested like 10 minutes and no hydration, 10 minutes, 20, 30 minutes. And then we did some fracture testing. And at the end, it turned out that the flexibility will rise significantly if you do rehydration, but you don't have to do it longer than 10 minutes. And we also did a small patient study in this publication, like 6 patients. And in these patients, we also saw that the rate of fractures was significantly higher when compared for the patient with hydration when compared to those without.
So what would be the ideal hydration time from your point of view?
It's not longer than 10 minutes.
10 minutes, more or less. Okay. Now, talking about the shell technique, you put the cortical plate and then you have sort of a gap between the native bone and the cortical plate. What would you put into the gap?
That's a really good question. I really cannot answer it. From the original technique, it was autologous bone, which works pretty good. We did it for a study. We did it with allogenic bone, works pretty good as well. And I now did some cases in using synthetic alloplastic bone substitute materials. I did some cases in using xenorganic bone. And honestly, I do not see any differences.
Okay. And what about the soft tissue management? I mean, we're talking about quite big bone defects, so I can imagine that the soft tissue management plays a crucial role in the whole process, doesn't it?
Absolutely. The soft tissue, the management of the soft tissue is the most important things. And if you cannot do a proper soft tissue management, you will have dehiscencies. And with these dehiscencies, you will lose a part of the graft. We also had some dehiscencies. Mostly the cortical plate was looking out of the mucosa. We just did cleaning, and at the end, it worked pretty good. The dehiscency rate was not very high. It was less than 10%. If you compare it to, for example, these titanium meshes with dehiscency rates of 20 to 30%, they are really higher because you have these titanium, which is not very compatible to the mucosa. So, at the end, to answer your questions, the soft tissue management is the most important thing. You have to close it, and you should close it without tension. Mm-hmm. So if you cannot do this, you might choose one size less.
10 minutes, more or less. Okay. Now, talking about the shell technique, you put the cortical plate and then you have sort of a gap between the native
well,
bone
we
and
try
the cortical plate.
Avoid in the interior jaw, we try to avoid like extensions, mesial and distal extensions, which are going into the lip, for example, just because you will have some scars. I think the most important thing is to make the extensions as broad as possible. We did we usually try to avoid big extensions, but they have to be big enough. And I think one of the major thing is the splitting of the periosteum. So you will gain significant weight.
And what about the soft tissue management? I mean, we're talking about quite big bone defects, so I can imagine that the soft tissue management plays a crucial role in the whole process, doesn't it?
Well, when I look into Instagram at the moment, I see like tons of people reporting on allogenic shell technique. And they show quite good results, interesting cases. But from my point of view and from the, let's say from the experience we gained during the last years, it is quite technique sensitive. And it is not an easy technique. And if I would do mostly like conservative dentistry and some minor surgery, I would not recommend to do it. I would stick to more like GBR procedures, which are quite reliable. You will not get that much height, and you will not get a vertical gain you can have when using these cortical plates, when using the shell technique. But you will get like 3 to 4 millimeters, which is sufficient in most cases. I would not do it if I would not have somebody. First, I was taught doing this, and then we do a lot of surgery, and therefore it's okay in our hands, but it's not easy.
Okay, so if I'm a dentist and I don't have a lot of experience with this, classical GBR, if I understand you correctly, in certain cases could be a good alternative to using the shell technique. Okay. And coming back to the shell technique, would you recommend the use of a barrier membrane when doing this procedure?
Yeah, we started using barrier membranes because there's a particular bone in there in the container, and we wanted to stay there. But we had some dehiscencies, and we thought that maybe it's because of the barrier membrane, which sometimes makes some problems in soft tissue healing. And then we stopped doing it, and it worked as well. So at the moment, we don't use membranes anymore. But okay. what we do is using PRF. So we put the bone substitute material is mixed with PRF in order to create kind of, let's say, sticky bone to make it a little bit formable, and in order to enhance the cellular initial reaction. The first thing, and then we put some PRF matrices onto the crafted materials in order to enhance soft tissue healing and in order to decrease the patient's pain. There are some meta-analyses showing that this really works.
Okay. So if I understand correctly, for the shell technique, you would not necessarily use a barrier membrane. How about classical GBR? Would you recommend the use of a barrier membrane there?
Well, GBR would not be GBR if you don't use a membrane, because GBR is always with a membrane. And in these cases, we just finished the German guideline on bone substitute materials, and we came to the conclusion that if you use particulate bone substitute material or particulate bone at all, you always need a membrane in order to stabilize it. And the membrane, if it's a collagen membrane, has a certain biological effect as well.
And what sort of barrier membranes do you usually use in your clinical practice?
Well, we have these. Normally we use collagen membrane, like the Jason membrane, which is honestly one of my favorite, not because I'm talking to Botus. It is one of the best membranes in the market. Then we have like PTFA membrane. For example, you have the PermaMem for more critical cases, because in those you don't need to do proper closure. In cases you don't, if you're pretty sure that you cannot achieve bone closure, then it's a good membrane, because it stays in there and there will be granulation underneath. And some colleagues of mine now also did some cases in working with titanium meshes, these customized 3D printed titanium meshes.
So you've done a wonderful webinar on the topic of soft tissue management around implants. Can you tell us a little bit more about this, or maybe about the significance of the soft tissue around the implant?
Well, it comes more and more into focus that the soft tissue is as important as the bone, if not more important than the bone, because it's just the closure. And that also accounts for the implants. So at the end, there is a certain significance that you need an amount of, let's say, 2 millimeters of fixed mucosa. I don't know if it has to be keratinized, but fixed mucosa around the implants. It comes from periodontology, in which you want to have like 2 millimeters around each tooth. And there's actually a publication showing that you don't need this fixed gingival tissue around the implants, but only if the patient is capable of doing perfect oral hygiene, which does not account for most of my patients. Also for me, I'm not sure if I can do it like 100% perfectly. So at least you need a little bit of fixed mucosa around an implant. And then is always the question how to achieve it. And we were talking in this webinar about the possibility to do like tissue crafts from the palate. You can do crafting from the cheek. You can do crafting for the big cases, cancer surgery. We do crafting from the leg using skin, split skin crafts. Or you can use like the soft tissue. They say a soft tissue equivalent collagen matrices. which we tried in a clinical clinical trial as well. And we now have the 4-year results, and the results are quite good. Also using these membranes. At the end, the aesthetic, from the aesthetic point of view, I think the membranes, they have the best result.
And what sort of membrane or what sort of soft tissue matrix did you use in this case?
Well, we used the mucoderm membrane for this. We used it for vestibuloplasty around implants, before or after placing the implants. You always have to keep in mind that if you do this, you will have a resorption after 2 years of 60%+. This is quite a lot. You won't have that much, this amount of resorption when using a soft tissue graft. Like from the palate, you will have like 20 to 30%. So you have to augment significantly more. But at the end, the aesthetical results are really, really good, and you will gain a significant amount of fixed mucosa around implants.
Okay, so yeah, Per, again, thank you very, very much for having taken the time today to do this podcast. It was a pleasure to have you here.
Yeah, it was a pleasure for me, as always.
And to all of our listeners, yeah, stay tuned and hope to see you at the next episode of the BOTUS podcast. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.